very clear that something is missing from people's lives. Charles Allen wrote back in the 50s, this is what he said of us Americans in the 50s. It's not gotten any better since. We Americans have more to make life easy than any people who have ever lived. We live in the finest houses, wear the nicest clothes, and eat the best food than any generation has ever known. Yet at the same time today, we have more suicides, more divorces, more people in jail, more mental illnesses than any people of all time. For many, life is a grim, desperate, unhappy affair. Something is missing. Something's missing from our lives. And what is it that's missing? It's God. God is missing. If there is no God, then earthly life has absolutely no purpose. It's just empty. It's vacuous. It has no purpose whatsoever. And if there is no God, the reality is human beings cannot be fulfilled. Something's missing. And the proposition for today's lesson is that that thing that is missing is God. As I said, life has no purpose without Him. And we've been made so that we cannot be fulfilled without Him. King Solomon used all of his unprecedented wisdom and wealth to do basically what John Lennon told us to do in his song, Imagine. You remember the song, don't you? It says, for us to imagine there's no God, no heaven, no hell, no religion, just people living for today. That was his idea of heaven on earth. So what Solomon basically did was, long before John Lennon ever had the thought, he said, you know what, I'm going to try this. I'm going to live just for today. I'm going to live without thought of God, heaven, hell, religion. And he did that as fully as anybody ever has, can, or ever will. But you know what the result was? It was not what John Lennon thought it would be. You turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. We're going to basically study the first three chapters of Ecclesiastes today. If you look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2, he said, of life without God, it is vanity. It is vanity of vanities. Everything is vanity if there is no God. This word vanity is a Hebrew word which means emptiness, futility, vapor. It basically describes what you have left after a soap bubble is burst. And it describes perfectly earthly life without God. It's something that doesn't last long, it doesn't leave anything behind, and it doesn't satisfy. That's life without God. Truly, it is vain. And what I think Solomon first does is he says, imagine doing this, and I think I've shared this with you, but imagine getting up in the morning, waking up, you get out of bed, you eat breakfast, you take your shower, you shave, you get ready for the day, and you walk out the door, and immediately you're back in bed. And you wake up and you eat breakfast and you shower and you shave and you get dressed and you walk out the door and you're back in bed. And that goes on and on and on and on and on. Would that be a fulfilling existence? No. Why? Well, because all of your effort doesn't serve any purpose at all. You're constantly getting ready for a day that never comes. And that's why earthly life without God is meaningless. If we are, as people say, the products of random chance, there's no purpose for us being here. Life is just utterly futile. That's what the preacher tells us in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 3. It says, what advantage does the man have in all his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. And then he talks about the cycle of life. He says, if we're just a part of a meaningless cycle of life, all things are wearisome, man is not able to tell it, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. So without God, what Solomon discovered is that life is a purposeless, continuing cycle that cannot possibly fulfill. But what people do is they'll object, of course. If you say to them, you can't be fulfilled without God, they'll say, oh, but we can. And I want to discuss four reasons why people think you can have fulfilled life without God. The first thing that people will say is, but there is purpose in life without God. We can change the world and make it a better place. That's what people are doing, trying to do without God. They're trying to. You know, that's why the environmental movement is so important to some people. They've got to have. And I'm certainly not against. I mean, I'm certainly against keeping the world nice. If the Lord made it, and we should take care of it. But for some people, it's a religion because they got to have something to give their life meaning. And so their object of their existence is to make the world a better place. I would respond three ways. First of all, so what if you do make the world a better place? Go back to the analogy that we had before. Imagine instead of living just in an average place, you actually had the best house. You woke up in the best house with the best bed. You had the best breakfast. You had the best toiletries. You had the best clothes. You had the best of everything in that cycle we talked about before. Would that make the cycle any more meaningful? Absolutely not. So if you make this world a place where there is no more war or anything else, is that going to make it satisfying? And the answer is no. And the second objection to this line of thinking is you can't really change the world. You really can't change the world. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 9. This is so fascinating to me. Solomon said, "That which has been is what will be. And that which has been done is what will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun." Is there anything of which one might say, "See, this is new, it is new"? Already as it existed for ages which were before us, there's no remembrance of earlier things, and also the later things which will occur, there will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. Now, what's he saying here? Obviously, we've developed new ways of doing things, but we have not developed any new things to do. That's what he's saying here. One put it this way, because we sometimes see things as recent in form, we think they're new in essence. We mistake a novelty for originality. Let me give you an example. Whether we do it face-to-face or whether we use smoke signals or telegraphs or letters or cell phones, what are people doing? They're communicating. Something that man has always done. Now, We've done it different ways, but in essence, all we're doing is what we've always done. And what's true of communicating is true of everything we do. No, we don't do everything the same way, but here's the point. Right now, we do everything that they did in the Garden of Eden. And in the future, 1,000 years from now, if the Lord doesn't return, you know what? They're not going to be doing anything differently than we're doing now. Sure, they'll do it different ways, but in essence, what they're doing will be exactly what's always been done and always will be done. And what's fascinating is the novelty of those new ways of doing old things quickly goes away. I mean, I don't know about you, but periodically, I'm still blown away by these cell phones. I mean, if you grew up having, you know, to the old phones where you actually had the rotary dial system. The cell phone, that's an amazing thing. But how many of us, you know, 15, 20 years ago, we were really fascinated by the cell phone. Now we take it for granted, don't we? It's no big deal. All we can do is, you know, we're not content with the 8. We want the 10 or the 12 or the 14 or the 16. So even while there is nothing new under the sun, there's new ways of doing old things, but we're not doing anything different than what's always been done. Even the novelty of doing new things wears off very quickly. But the sad thing is, we never learn the lesson that changing life and making it fundamentally different is impossible. We keep thinking we can change the world and we'll do it with the next big new thing that comes along. You know what? Whatever that new thing's going to be, it's not really a new thing and it's not going to change the world in which we live. Now, is that depressing? A little bit. But God wants us to think about these kind of things so that we'll understand that without Him, life has no purpose at all. And that's what He said. He said, "I set my mind to seek and to explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under the heavens." So here, Solomon is doing what John Lennon recommended. He said, okay, I'm going to see if life can be meaningless without God. And here's what he said. "What I've been doing is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with." In other words, God wants us to think about life and think seriously about its purpose and understand that it is absolutely futile without Him. "I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind." If there is no God, life to me is depressing because you can't, it doesn't change, and it doesn't, certainly doesn't get any better. Look at chapter 1, verse 15, Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 15. He says there, what is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. So what I'm saying is, some people say there's purpose in life even if there's not a God, because we can make the world a better place. Number one, even if you make the world a better place, does it really make you any more fulfilled? No. Two, has mankind really ever changed the world? No. Human beings are doing what human beings have always done and always will do. Yeah, we may have some more new gizmos and gadgets of ways of doing those things, but nothing fundamentally changes, and the newness of that wears off quickly. And once we're dissatisfied, wanting the next new thing, thinking it's going to change the world, and it never does. And the third point he makes is that you can't make the world a better place to live. You just can't. What's crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. And I know this is true, because if you could make the world a better place, we would not be debating gun control, because periodically people are going out and using the latest technology to blow people away and then kill themselves. I'm a big Star Trek fan, and Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, he had this vision that human beings are going to keep on getting better and better and better and better. Hasn't worked in 5,000 years, and if the Lord doesn't come back for another 5,000 years, it's not going to work then either. Technology may change, but that doesn't improve the world. Because why? Because the people who use the technology don't change. They're the same today as they were in the future, and they will be in the past. And are there exceptions? Do some people improve? Yes, but are there enough people that improve to substantially change the world in a positive way? And the answer to that is no. I like the way Henry David Thoreau put it over a century ago. He says, all we do with improving technology, and listen to this, is devising improved means to unimproved ends. Think about the invention of guns. When guns came along, did that make them better people than the people that used bows and arrows? And when bows and arrows were invented, did that make them better than people that used spears? No. Why? Well, each improvement in technology was potentially a blessing or a curse. I mean, the guns, what could they do? They could help a man more efficiently and humanely provide for his family. I'm sure a lot of times when you would use bows and arrows, you would injure an animal but wouldn't kill the animal, and the animal would suffer and you'd still not have food. Guns made the task of providing for your family more efficient and more humane. So guns could serve a very good purpose. Or man could use guns, instead of being more humane with them, to just a more destructive way of proving the inhumanity of man to man. It's all up to the person who uses those things. And what happened with guns? Well, we've had people use them both ways, and nothing's changed. The world's not a better place. Now, I've spent a lot of time trying to say this well, so let me just, I'm going to read from my notes. Technology is not the answer to a problem, because we are the problem. Guns don't kill people any more than spoons make people fat. People kill people, and people make people fat. Life on earth will not change for the better until people change for the better, and people will not change for the better until they believe in and submit to God. As long as people live as if they are products of random chance and the survival of the fittest, might makes right, and kill or be killed will be the rule of the day, and the world will never become a better place. So people say the world can be a better place even if there's not a God. No, it can't. Make it as good as you can be, it's still not going to have any purpose. But things have never changed, and they've not gotten better, and they're not going to start. So life without God, I'm sorry, it's meaningless, because you can't make the world a better place. But some people will say, but people are living longer than ever. Isn't that a good thing? I mean, you think about it, over the last 150, 200 years, people, you know, the average life expectancy back in the Civil War times was around 40 or 50 years of age. Now people are 70 or 80 years of age. Isn't that better? Let me suggest to you the answer for most people is no. Go back to the opening quotation. Most people in this country are miserable human beings. And I would suggest longer life just does a couple of things for people. First of all, it just gives them more time to think how empty their life is if they're not living for God. I'm so glad I'm a Christian. I believe in God because it gives me purpose and meaning and direction. If I woke up every morning and had no meaning, purpose, and direction in my life, I would be, of all men, most pitiful. And the longer I have to contemplate that, the more depressed I would be. And I think that's what the writer's saying here in Ecclesiastes 1:16. He says, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized this also a striving after wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. If there's no God, that's exactly true. And all more life does is give you more time to contemplate your worthlessness. And usually what happens is when people are contemplating their worthlessness, what they're going to try to do is find some fulfillment in things that are actually going to leave them off worse than they started. They're going to try to find fulfillment in things that are akin to drinking seawater. If you're very, very thirsty, sometimes people will panic and drink salt water. What does that do? It makes them thirstier than ever before, and it ultimately kills them. And that's what happens when people turn to drugs and to sex and to power and to fame to try to fill this hole that only God can fill. It just leaves them emptier than ever. And I think that's what Solomon did. He said, all right, I'm gonna live my life without thought of God. I'm going to indulge myself every way. So he said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it was two was futility. I said, if laughter is madness and a pleasure, what does it accomplish? Then he goes on and talks about how he accumulated all these things and he had all of these properties and he had all this stuff. He says, all that my eyes desired did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. He says, I enjoyed building and doing all this stuff, but at the end of the day, I realized, what difference does it make? I mean, all of this effort he was putting forth was to no purpose, and it ultimately left him empty. He says, thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. More time is not a friend to godless people. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 6. Later on in the book, he explores this a little further. He says, if a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they may be, but his soul is not satisfied with good things, if you live 2,000 years and you're not a godly person, he says, better the miscarriage than he, for it comes in futility and goes into obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. It never sees the sun and it never knows anything. It is better off than he, even if the other man lives 1,000 years twice. No matter how long we live, we're never going to have the resources that Solomon had to conduct this experiment on this scale. But what happens is every generation says, you know what, Solomon, he got it wrong. He got it wrong. Even though he had resources beyond our wildest imagination, probably the richest king that has ever lived in humanity, even though he used all of that wealth to try to find some kind of satisfaction in anything other than God, and he failed miserably, what every generation since has said, you know what, he didn't do it right. He didn't do it right. I'm going to show you that if I just get more earthly stuff than I have, ultimately I'll get to where I have enough, and I'm going to be fulfilled. Solomon says, don't you dare buy into that lie. Chapter 2, verse 12 says, so he said, I can turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? Every generation has conducted this experiment, and it has failed. We talked the other night in our class on the Sermon on the Mount about Robin Williams. I'm sure he probably had some mental issues. But there was a guy who disdained God. He thought religion was foolish. And he lived just for today. But he had everything the world said you need to be fulfilled and satisfied. If anybody should have ever been fulfilled and satisfied, it should have been Robin Williams. But he didn't have God in his life, and what did he do? He hung himself and killed himself. people will say, but there is advantage to earthly wisdom. Some, but not enough to make a difference, to make life fulfilling. Look what he says in verse 13. He says, I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. I mean, if you're going to be ungodly, it's better to be wise than a fool, but you're still not going to be satisfied. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness, and yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. So why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. Solomon says, I've tested it, and life without God is vain. Oh, no, it's not. We can make your world a better place. No, you can't. But people can live longer. That just gives you more time to be heartbroken because of the purposeless of life without God. Some say, but it's better to be wise than a fool, even if you're not godly. Well, that's true, but it doesn't make life meaningful. And then the final thing people will say is this, well, okay, maybe we can't change the world, but we can make life better for our family. Solomon addresses this, and he says, you know, each possibility of doing that diminishes with each generation that comes along. Notice what he says. The point is, I can't change the world, but I can make life better for my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids. All right, here's an experiment. How many of you know your mother's 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 name? How many of you know your mother's 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 name? That's just four generations back. What was her name? What was she like? Was she a Christian? Atheist? Agnostic? Most of us have no clue. And she probably lived, 100 years ago? 100 years from now, how much are our great-great-great-great-grandkids going to remember us? The point is that we really are not as important or influential as we think we are. He says, there's no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten. And how the wise man and the fool alike die. I hated life, for the work which I had been done in the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. If you think you're going to make the world a better place just for your kids, you're wrong. He goes on to say in chapter 2 and verse 18, I mean, what if you leave all this stuff to your kids? And I've seen this happen. You work and you work and you work and you try to pile stuff up so your kids will have a better life than you'll have. And what you sometimes do is you give them a lot of money. You know what? It makes their life infinitely worse than the one you had. I've seen that over and over again. And so did Solomon. He said, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. It says, therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he gives this legacy to one who has not labored with them, this too is vanity and a great evil. So Solomon, he just said, I'm going to see if I can find satisfaction without God. And he had resources that we can only imagine. Basically, he lived what we... why is the lottery so popular? It's popular because people still buy into the lie that if they had that kind of money, life would be great. And it wouldn't. And I think evidence proves that if you win the lottery, it's probably going to be one of the worst things that ever happened to you in your life. People think they can find fulfillment in just having more earthly things than they already have. And the only thing that really happens is the more earthly things you get is the more earthly things you need to think you'd be satisfied. And that's covetousness, and that's a lesson we'll have in the future. Life without God, it's purposeless, it's meaningless, it can't be fulfilling. Solomon tested it, proved that it was true, and people would object and saying, but you can make the world a better place. No, you can't, but you can live longer. So what? That's just depressing. You can be smart, but that earthly wisdom without any purpose behind it doesn't get you anywhere. But I can make the world a better place for my kids. No, you can't. That's a pretty bleak picture, isn't it? And life is bleak without God. Life is bleak without God. And here's the conclusion of the whole matter. I believe in chapter 1 and 2 of Ecclesiastes, up till verse 22 and 23, what you're doing is looking at life without God. And really, verses 22 and 23 are the conclusion of the first half of the book. Here's the conclusion of the whole matter if there's not a God. Let's look at it. Ecclesiastes 2, 22 through 23. What does a man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun? Nothing. Because all his days, his task is painful and grievous. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Life without God, it's a bleak, depressing affair. But here's some good news. Here's good news. Beginning in verse 24, Solomon switches gears. For the rest of this book, he shows us how life is fulfilling. If you'll reject the philosophy of people like John Lennon and Gene Roddenberry and start believing and obeying God. If you'll believe and obey God instead of life being depressing, it can have ultimate. It has ultimate meaning, and you can even turn its worst parts into the greatest blessings your life has ever seen. Let's look at what he says beginning in verse 24. First of all, he says, there is a God. There is a God. There is a God. And we can't be complete without Him, but you know what? If we'll believe and obey in Him, He will make us whole. Look at what it says there. It says, there's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that all his labor is good. Rejoice in life. Why? Because this also I've seen that it is from the hand of God. There is a God. There is a God, and He wants you to be blessed. He wants you to be whole. He wants to fulfill you. Who can eat and who can have enjoyment without Him? The answer to that is nobody can. But if you're a good person, if you do what He says, for to a person who is good in His sight, He has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. So here's the good news. There's a God. And He wants to fulfill you. He wants to bless you. And He will if you just let Him. Second, if we refuse to believe in and obey God, we serve His purposes, but not to our own advantage. It's interesting. People who are so angry and so adamantly want to say there's no God, you know what? They're serving His purposes. If they really appreciated that, it'd probably just irritate them to death. But all these people that are just anti-God, you know what? They're serving God's purposes, but they're just not going to get any credit for it because they're doing it the wrong way. Verse 26 says, to the sinner He is given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after wind. There's a God. And everything about life serves its purpose, even the fact that there are wicked people on the face of the earth. Why does God allow evil people to live? Well, because He's got a plan. He's got a purpose. And He knows what He's doing. Which is really the third point that He makes. This cycle of life that we go through is not a random thing. It didn't happen because of meaningless chance. It was the deliberate choice of God, and it is meaningful in every respect. I just want to read with you Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 11. I don't have it all on the overhead, but listen to this. We get up in the morning and we get out of bed and we eat our breakfast and we put our clothes on and we walk out the door and we can be fulfilled because all that effort is for the purpose of getting outside and serving and glorifying God. Everything that God has given us to do in this life serves a meaningful purpose. And if you doubt that, listen. There's a point of time for everything. There's a time for every event under heaven, a time to give birth and a time to die. A time to plant, a time to uproot what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to shun embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear apart and a time to sew together, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Here's the question. What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? He says, I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves, and He has made everything appropriate or beautiful in its time. We're born into this world, and we age, and we grow up, and we leave and cleave, and we have kids, and they leave and cleave, and then we spoil our grandkids, and then we get older, and we die. Is that a bleak, depressing, mind-numbing, painful process? Yes, if you don't believe in God. But if you believe in God, every stage of life that you go through is absolutely it's filled with purpose and it's filled with meaning. And we need to appreciate that very, very much. The next verse tells us the fourth thing. God has made us so that if we can find Him in the true meaning of life, if we'll just look. Look at verse 11. It says, He has set eternity in their hearts, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. That phrase, He has put eternity in their hearts. What does that mean? What that means, I think, is that God has made all of us, every human being, He's made us so that there's something in us that can only be satisfied by Him. You can have all the money, all the fame, all the power, and you'll never be satisfied because there's something in every human being that nothing but the divine can fulfill. There's a spiritual hunger and thirst that we must eat and drink, eat the flesh of Jesus and drink His blood in order to be satisfied by. One person put it this way, the soul has its hunger and thirst. These desires were built into man at creation. Augustine said it perfectly, Thou hast made us for Thyself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in Thee. Just as it is normal for the deer to thirst after the water brook, so it is natural for man to thirst after God. He may not know that his thirst is for God, and he will probably try to satisfy that thirst with a substitute that will leave him with more thirst. But a thirst for God is what it is just the same. God has put eternity in our hearts, and the temporal cannot satisfy it. And really what I think this phrase is saying, in this, without getting into it deeply, is that God has put this God-sized hole in our hearts so that we'll seek to fulfill it. And it's in seeking to find fulfillment in this life that we understand that nothing in this life but God can match that. And so He created that hole so that we would seek Him and find Him and enjoy the fulfillment that we all so desperately long for. And the bottom line is this, brethren. If we don't find God, we have no excuse. Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 22 makes it very clear that He has left more than enough evidence that He is. For anybody who comes along and says He's not, He's going to be without excuse in the day of judgment. And so really, the Bible makes it really pretty plain, and I don't mean to be ugly about this, but if we are absolutely bent on saying there is no God, the Bible says we are fools. This is not rocket science. It's not rocket science. There is a God, and we can find fulfillment in Him if we'll be good in His sight. If we don't serve God, we still serve His purposes, ironically. We're just not going to get any credit for it. There's a cycle to life, and it's meaningful in every respect. There's a cycle to life, and it's meaningful in every respect. And we can find God if we want to. Now, the last couple of points are really for those of us who are believers. And I have a whole lesson devoted to this that I'll just briefly mention right now. I think what he says to those who are believers is, you know what? Since there is a God and every phase of life is full and rich of meaning, we need to be happy always, fulfilled always. We need to rejoice always. Notice what it says in chapter 3, verse 12. I know there's nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor, it is the gift of God. God did not put us here for us to be depressed and down and broken. He gave us free will and we freely chose to sin, which broke us. But He is the bread of life. He can heal us. And He wants to. Jesus Christ wants to show you how to live life the way it ought to be lived. I was over at Brooklyn yesterday hearing a preacher talk about how you should read the Bible for all it's worth. And one thing you do when you read the Bible for all it's worth, if you really want to get a lot out of Bible study, what you need to do is appreciate what you're reading. It is a book written by God to you so that you can be fulfilled in time and you can be fulfilled in eternity. You know, if I came up to people and said, I've got a book that if you read it and do it without fail in 6 months, you'll have $1 billion. How many of us would go down to the store and buy it? There's a book that's been sitting on our shelves drawing dust for a lot of cases all our life. that will enrich us infinitely greater than that in far shorter time if we'll just dust it off, pick it up, and start studying. We need to be on top of the world as Christians because God is the answer to all of our problems. He's not the problem. He is the answer. And the final point that Solomon makes is that if we don't rejoice in what God has provided us, we're going to answer to Him for our arrogant and dissatisfaction. Notice what he says here. He says, I know that everything God does will remain forever. In other words, God built life the way it is. It's going to stay the way it's always been because it's perfectly suited for the purposes He made it for. There's nothing to add to it and there's nothing to take from it. Life as God designed it is just fine. We shouldn't rail against God because we think He did such an inept job of creating life. We need to trust that He created life just the way it needs to be, and we need to figure out how to live it so that it's a blessing and not a curse. There's nothing to take from it. There's nothing to add to it, for God has worked that men should fear Him. If you think about God, instead of doing what John Lennon wants us to do and to imagine there is no God, no religion, no heaven, no hell, if we'll dwell on the fact that there is a God, there is a true religion, there is a heaven and there is a hell, if we'll dwell on those things, then we should, instead of being in despair of the futility of being the product of primordial ooze being struck by lightning and survival of the fittest, we should be in awe of the fact that we are creatures of God who has created us and loves us so much that He gave His only Son to die so that we can go to heaven and be with Him. That's not what I think He says there when He says, for God has worked that men should fear Him. The idea is be in awe of Him. That which is has been already, and that which will be has already been, for God seeks what has passed by. Now that's a difficult phrase to translate. One person said the following. They said, scholars have had a difficult time agreeing on the translation of this phrase. It literally says, God seeks what hurries along. Solomon seems to be saying that time swiftly goes by and gets away from us, but God keeps track of it and will, at the end of time, call into account what we have done with time. So what are we saying? We're saying, you know, what is life without God? It's vanity. No matter what excuses you offer, the reality, the bottom line is it's vanity without God. But there is a God. And so life is not vain. It's a wonderfully created tool of God for our benefit and our blessing. Instead of fighting against Him and being down, if we will work with Him, we can be on top of the world. So quit denying there's a God. The evidence is overwhelming. And if you are a believer, quit fighting against what He wants you to do and yield yourself to Him completely, utterly, and totally. You'll find that it's the best decision you have ever made in your life.